20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, Episode 12, Part 1. Hello and welcome to Episode 12 of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast. I'm Adam.
And I'm not. I'm Alistair. That's right.
Well, it's a bit like Alicia, isn't it? Alista.
Nearly
right. Yes, and we're here to review the whole of Series 5, or Series 1, or Series 13, what was it?
31? Yeah, Season 31, I don't know.
Yes, Moffat Land.
Moffat Land, that's good.
So, I suppose we better start with Episode 1.
The 11th Hour.
Yes. And you have all the notes.
Well, I have my notes, if I can read them.
And don't think me to have notes.
Which I made as it was sort of, you know, waffling away in the background. So what do I say first? Well, it doesn't quite follow on from the end of time.
Yeah, so on End of Time Part 2. Yeah.
In as much as, you know, Matt Smith hang out with the actual TARDIS itself and fly across London. There we are. Never mind.
Does it not?
Well, not really.
Well, he said he was crashing, didn't he? And then he went Geronimo, and it was...
And the next minute he's hanging out the door. Okay, whatever. Something's happened in the meantime.
Yeah, something has happened in between, because he hasn't got his shirt on, has he? Oh, sorry, his jacket, and his shirt's all ripped up. Well, I thought they were going to actually explain that somewhere along the line, but obviously that didn't really matter to the storyline.
Never mind.
Indeed. Sorry.
So, do we like the new titles, and do we like the new music?
Well, I didn't to start off, but quite like it now.
I like the new music from the right from the start.
The music I was referring to.
Yeah. The new titles, they're okay. I like the new logo. And I like the bit where the DW of the new logo turns into the TARDIS itself and goes spinning off.
That's quite good, yes.
But a sort of tunnel of cloud. What's that all about? Lightning? What?
A bit of a dreamland, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, back to Moffat's sort of fairy tale land.
Well, I thought, fair enough, I agree with you about the logo and stuff, but I still think that the shiny sort of writing for the sort of names of Karen Gillan and Matt Smith are a bit sort of, no offence to our American listeners, but American.
Hmm.
Sort of, sorry, just... Don't worry, I'm fiddling.
Okay. Fiddle away, dear, fiddle away. right, okay. Why is Amy praying to Santa? I still don't understand that.
Hmm.
Well, Amelia, I should say.
Yeah.
Dear Santa, da-da-da-da-da. Don't understand that.
Well, I suppose maybe it's... Because is it Christmas? Because remember the Doctor was... It was
is
New
it
Year's Day, wasn't
is
it?
Is it Christmas? Oh, it was New Year's Day.
So he might have just slipped slightly back in time, maybe.
Oh, I see.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, even so. It seems a bit odd to me. Mm. Young Amelia, I've written brilliant here, exclamation mark, because I think she is. I don't know if actually
she's not really an actress. That's remarkable part of it.
But I thought she was superb. Mm. And really sort of held her own, as it were, with our new leading man.
Yeah, she did really. She was. She had a sort of a charisma, didn't she? The screen lighter, or the camera lighter, or something, however the term goes.
And talking of our new leading man, well, what I've written here, boundless enthusiasm and something, or energy, that's it. Which he's displayed throughout, really.
Yeah,
I think he's really thrown himself into it, and I think he just gets the Doctor, you know.
I just think the remarkable thing about him is that so many people have said that he's sort of drawing from previous Doctors, and bearing in mind he's one of 11 sort of personalities in a way that would be expected. I would have thought that that would happen to him, because I think he's done that very subtly, even though people sort of he's drawing from there, he's drawing from McCoy, and I've sort of seen.
Well, I don't see that at all. Actually, I think he's made it very much his own.
Well, I agree, but what I'm saying, if people are saying he's drawing from McCoy, one person I've seen not from a particular scene is always drawing from McCoy, then another person's always drawing from Trout, and it's acting the same scene. So obviously, he's got the character of the Doctor off to a tee.
Yeah, but those previous Doctors were very unique in their own way, and I think he is too. I don't think he's drawing on anything.
No, I agree. He is very much his own Doctor.
Any more than Tennant did, or McGann, or anybody else.
Maybe people just like to see things in it.
Yes. Well, don't we? Don't we, though? Yes.
Indeed.
The food sequence I've got here, you're spitting things all over the place. I mean, I don't know. I had one level of sort of, oh, my God, do we really need this? And I'm watching it again. I thought, okay, this is, you set taste buds and he's getting getting himself sorted out. I suppose it's acceptable or whatever. It was actually quite funny.
But if you're a parent and you see a child's your favourite character on television spitting their food out, then you're going to have a nightmare when your child starts spitting the food out. You can't do that.
I did like the line, "You're Scottish, fry something." And carrots, are you insane? A little reference to Mel, maybe, I don't know.
Somebody else had made a reference to that.
And Amelia Pond, like a name from a fairy tale.
Is it?
Which, I mean, Moffat in All the Confidentials said repeatedly, Doctor Who's a fairy tale.
Oh, yes. But how's Amelia Pond... I suppose it does in some ways have a... It's very unusual, isn't it? But I can't... Oh, well, maybe things will be explained later. I suppose River Song's a bit like a name from a...
It is, very much so.
Very fairy tale, isn't it?
Right. Da-da-da-da-da. I still watching it again, because I've only watched it twice when it was first broadcast, and then watching it again, I still haven't quite got my head around this whole patient zero and where it comes from and where it's escaped from, and anything of that sort of side of the storyline at all. I still haven't,
that's the same for me, because the crack is supposed to be a crack caused by the explosion of the TARDIS.
Two parts of space and time that should never have touched.
That crack, on this instance, is a prison containing Prisoner Zero.
Right.
Apparently, that's what I got from it. But, you know, it's supposed to be a crack in space and time caused by a TARDIS exploding.
Yes.
Or maybe it's the TARDIS and the Pandorica exploding. Well, the Pandorica was a prison, but the Prisoner Zero was not within the Pandorica.
No.
So, yes, I agree. It's still
so the crack, looking at the season overview as far as the crack is concerned, that is sort of backtracking the TARDIS during the course of its journeys in the season, and leaving a bit of itself wherever the TARDIS goes, because it appears in all stories bar one, I think.
Yes, it does. No, I think there's two it doesn't appear. It doesn't appear in...
It's not in the Lodger, except in the flashback to the Lodger in the last episode, when he's hopping around. Yes, it's in the street behind him, isn't it?
Is it?
When Amy goes...
In the flashback, yeah. That, then I'd say that doesn't count.
So it's not in that episode. In the Lodger itself. Is it in the Venice one?
No.
No, right.
Or is it?
I can't remember.
I think it is. Somebody said it was a lightning bolt.
I must check my notes later on.
Somebody said it was a couple of subtle appearances, apparently. But somebody said it was a bolt of lightning was like the crack in that episode. Mm-hmm. But it definitely, as far as I remember, doesn't appear in Doctor and... Vincent and the Doctor, if I remember rightly.
Okay.
But there you go. Yeah sorry.
I've got Rory's name written down here.
Or as Alicia would call him, Vorvi.
Vorvi? Why is that?
She can't pronounce her R's particularly well. She's getting better.
Is she not?
No.
Hey. Good job McCoy isn't saying that. He'd be rolling his Rory's all over.
Rory. Or that chap from...
I've got Wimp, Nerdy written down here. And
is this observation of him from that particular episode?
Well, I think it must have been, yes.
Okay, go on.
Which was only strengthened in later episodes. Perhaps not towards the end so much. It just struck me quite early on that yet again we have, you know, the sexiest, sassiest Doctor Who girl ever, again.
Oh, gorgeous.
With a wimpy, nerdy boyfriend, again. And I don't know,
So do you think Mickey was quite nerdy as well?
Yes.
I don't think he was as nerdy as...
I don't think Noel Clark's nerdy, by the way.
That's Rory.
But anyway, that's all I've written for that. Again, a bit of dialogue here, and it sort of reflects back to the Fifth Doctor, which allegedly is Moffat's favourite, I think. Why does no one ever listen to me, or have I got the sort of face that no one ever listens to, or that sort of thing, or no one ever takes any notice of, that sort of element he's bringing into it, maybe. Amy, I got here. That's right. Now, Amy's performance in this whole thing, because she starts off when it's Cameron, not the wee mite. Mm. She's very intense quite early on. She's a lot of sort of hard stares, and she seems quite troubled. We find out why later on, of course. Mm. And the big change from that is the point where she traps his tie in the car,
yes,
and has to make a decision. I think that the apple is involved in that as well.
Yeah.
And there's quite a noticeable difference there in her performance. And I think Karen's great as well as Matt. I think together they work very well, and they're obviously having a good time doing it, which obviously helps. So I'm enjoying both of their performances, really.
But it's quite interesting looking back, obviously knowing the outcome of the series, and there's certain aspects that I never picked up for the whole thing, even though you know, they arrive, a little girl living on her own in a big house, and the doctor does say, oh, where are your parents? And it doesn't dawn on me that parents have gone into the crack. And yeah. there she's holding a fresh apple with a face cut into it, which apparently is done by her mum in that.
That's episode. Right, yes.
So that, again, it didn't dawn on me. But there you go.
Very clever. I thought we were just out for the night.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, that's right, yes. I'm reading this and trying to make sense of it at the same time. But the multiform thing, I thought it was a very good idea, the way it was both conceived and carried out. Dare I say something sort of typically Moffat, I don't know if it is or not really, but having, you know, one life form within two separate bodies, as it were, joined together. I've obviously the guy and the dog, the woman and the two little girls. And when the little girl starts talking with the mother's voice,
it's creepy.
That's a nice sort of creepy moment. One thing I didn't like about the sort of sneaky thing, the Prisoner Zero thing, was the fact that it's attached to something out of shot all the time. What's it hanging from or glued to, or has it got a sticky end or something that's stuck to the ceiling? Who knows? I can't read that at all.
Now, while you're trying to decipher it, I must say the thing I found creepy about that, obviously they seem to have a bit of an obsession with teeth for the whole series, but when the two little girls open their mouths up and they had those teeth, I thought that was pretty creepy.
Then we get this line which shapes things to come, it seems, for season 6 of the Pandorical that will open and silence will fall.
Yeah.
And next year we get to find out what the silence is.
Or could it be the darkness?
Yeah,
oh no, that's a couple of years ago, wasn't
Right.
So that covers the 11th hour.
Well, it does pretty much. Then is anything else?
So what was your overall sort of views on
it? I thought it was a good start off for him. I think he sort of hit the ground running. I don't know when it was filmed in the overall scheme of things, because The Angels was done first.
Yes.
But now I thought he came across very well. I think he set himself up very well. And if you didn't want to tune in the next week to find out what was going to happen next, you must be an idiot.
Oh, yeah. No, I loved it. I must admit, I still look back. It's one I can watch over and over again and get lots and lots of entertainment out of. I do enjoy that episode. Like I do with a lot of the first episodes of a lot of the Doctors, even Twin Dilemma, which most of the Doctor Who fans I know or have heard of absolutely detest. But I know there's some aspects of Twin Dilemma, I'm not going to diverse for too long, but that aren't very good.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also some delightful things of seeing Colin Baker sort of roar and, in the role of the Doctor, which he more or less is fairly consistently kept to this day, to a certain degree, and which is nice. And there's some other good performances within the story itself. But anyway, moving on. Yes, we move on to The Beast Below.
We do. I have to turn a page. I'm going the wrong direction. Ah, there we are. The Beast Below, yes. Okay, what have we got here?
I think I've only seen it. Oh, I did see it again, yes. I've seen it twice.
Well, the first thing I've got written here, which I must have written at the end, although it's written at the top, A Vehicle for Amy. It's very much a vehicle for Amy and showing her in her sort of true colours or whatever. I mean, it's set up that way, it's executed that way. And I think she sails through it very well.
I agree.
Nice intriguing beginning I've got written here. With the kids, isn't it? And the head thing turning around, that's right, and the lift and all that.
Mm.
I've got to say, that Starship UK thing, I didn't like that at all. I just thought it was so awful looking, the actual... I just thought it looked...
Well, the whale I thought was a bit naff as well. But I mean, but again, I'll forgive it because we've had so many naff things in Doctor Who. I think that one's one you have to sort of think of the story. But there's so many little issues that other people have brought up in relation to this story. Not least the Doctor and Amy not vomited into space. Well, the explanation of that was that the mouth was sort of welded shut or something like that, so it could only go back up its own inner tube things that had been wired into it. So, but there was another reason.
I'm sure there was a line of dialogue to cover that.
Oh yes, why does Amy know the Doctor is old and ancient and blah blah blah? She has sort of known him in a way since she was a child, so that might explain that away, I don't know.
Okay, it's odd, really, watching the episode and then watching the Confidentials. I didn't watch any of the Confidentials when they were broadcast. I watched them for the first time, having watched the episode again.
Yeah.
And so watching the confidential for this episode and seeing the time and presumably the money that went into making that main sort of set of the street with the, the telephone boxes and all the rest of it, all the sort of London town paraphernalia. And on the screen, I just thought it looked awful. And just really sort of cheap and tacky, like no money had been spent on it at all. So, I don't know,
something... It reminded me of, do you remember that scene on Utopia, when they're sort of, Captain Jack and the Doctor and Martha had just arrived, and that little boy was sort of like, they were trying to find...
Oh, yeah.
And they were walking through, and there was a bit more
classic.
Wasn't
that Blue Peter Winner or something?
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
That, it reminds me of that sort of set, in a way. It probably wasn't, but it just reminds me. I know they have reused some sets in this series from previous productions, but... just a less cluttered version of the same set.
Perhaps it was the same old factory or something.
Maybe.
I've made a little note here about Dean Street. One of the streets on the set is Dean Street. Maybe that's an in-joke, because that's where the shop Forbidden Planet used to be. I don't know.
Mm. Good point. And what about the magpie references on it? I thought that one might come back. Well, I thought that had some reference or relevance, I suppose, to the whole arc, really. But maybe it was just a sort of a hat tip to... that particular episode from season two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mr. Magpie.
Mr. Magpie.
But there wasn't, but yeah, I suppose maybe that's a coincidence. I don't know. But I thought at the time, oh, look, look, it's Mr. Magpie. Not out the window. I mean,
no,
it would have been quite ironic if they had been a magpie.
There was some sort of bird fluttering by. Yes. I saw it. I looked, it's an albatross, no.
But yeah, not my favourite story of the series.
It was a lot better watching it again than my initial impression of it.
There's things I missed first time around when I watched it again.
And I like the fact that the Doctor sees this little girl crying and no one's taking the slightest bit of attention, and that's what he focuses in on and wants to know why. And that's what gets the story rolling, really.
Yeah.
Little things like that, which, you know, what other programme are you going to find that in? Sort of thing. That seems very Doctor
One thing Who-ish. I found a bit dodgy, though, another bit at the beginning where Amy's flying sort of outside and the Doctor's holding on to her leg looking up. What's he looking up at?
She's wearing a nightie, yes.
Yes. Naughty Doctor.
Naughty Doctor.
And
we get the bloody... Sorry, can I say bloody on this?
Well, the Queen did, and
I just have done. I'm going to say that I'm the bloody Queen, yeah. I am the bloody Queen, and all.
Yeah.
The Virgin Queen joke, again. I give it a rest, please. It's not funny. It wasn't funny first time around. It's not funny now.
I've used that reference about three times. Though.
Yes, and I did like her line, Liz Ten, about something with the stamps.
Yeah,
that was quite amusing. What's this all about? I can't read that.
No, I'm just trying to remember bits of the story now that sort of stick in my mind as being particularly good. No.
So again, performance-wise, the bit towards the end where the Doctor loses his rag, basically, and says something like, "No one human talks to me right now," or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought, oh, yes, this is what I'm going to... The Doctor's back, which I don't think he has been for the last year or so, just Tennant overacting.
Well, people said that when he did that, it was like McCoy's shouting in Battlefield.
Oh, no.
No, I've heard people say
no,
that.
No, rubbish. McCoy can't shout to save his life. Unfortunately, and Matt can, that's all right. We'll have a word said against
No, I'm just referring, I don't agree with it, but I have things that people have said. There's a chap called Darth Skeptical who regularly contributes to Potshock, and it's the sort of thing he would say. But I do like his comments, his comments on the Big Bang were rather daft. Well, I'll come back to them when we come to the Big Bang, if you can remind me, I'll come back to it.
Have we said enough about that?
Because that
leads into the next one by way of the phone call from Winston Churchill.
I didn't like that particular scene, to be honest with you. But, I mean, I can live with it as part of a storyline.
Unless I misheard, in the episode he says, "Hello, dear, how are you?" And in the confidential he says, "Hello, how can I help?" or "What can I do for you?" or something.
I don't know, I never spotted that one.
Yes, he says something different in the confidential. Yeah.
That's interesting, I'll have to look at that.
Mm.
But, yes, I mean... As a whole, Beast Below, it's just one of those episodes you sort of watch. I don't mind it. I mean, I will watch it again as if I'm watching the series. And it's not, I love all Doctor Who, but it's not the best of the series. I say people sort of slate Victory of the Daleks, we're just about to talk about, but I think
and I'm going
to
be one of them.
I think Victory of the Daleks is basically better than Beast Below. But you carry on your rant about Victory.
Well,
of the
no,
Daleks.
I don't know. I have a rant about it. I mean, I don't want to start slagging off Mark Gatiss because I've known Mark Gatiss for years. He's not a friend of mine, but I have known him for years. And I know my overall feeling about Victory of the Daleks, it just feels like a two-parter that was shunted down into one.
And a lot of people have said that.
And
so it must be true.
And suffered for it as a result. Whether it is true or not, there's no mention of it anywhere that I've read.
Obviously, as you well know, the initial scripts are a certain length, aren't they? So they have to be either lengthened or shortened. And I'd say you're probably right, that has been massively shortened.
Yeah. But it reads like, you know, it seems just so heavily truncated. And, I mean, my biggest bugbear with it, plot-wise, is that 1 minute, enemy planes are sighted over the channel and they'll be here in 10 minutes.
Yes.
And, oh, my God, all the lights of London are all lit
up.
And it's never mentioned again.
Oh, right.
So do they attack or don't they?
True.
Then within a space of a couple of beats, suddenly there are Spitfires in space.
I can't find any way that they can explain away how 1 minute Professor, what's his name?
You know? Bracewell.
Is saying, yes, we're experimenting with these anti-gravity blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly they've got about six planes that they can build. And within, and there's no say, oh, well, a few weeks later. It seems, because the Doctor's up in the blooming thing, so he hasn't said, "Oh, we've built these planes, and we can now experiment with them." I can forgive it because I quite enjoy the story, but there are massive holes in it. That, not just that, there was another bit which was a bit odd in relation to what you were saying. We carry on because I've gone off on a tangent now.
talking of Bracewell, actually, and jumping ahead in the flashback, well, not flashback, at the beginning of the Big Bang. Is it the Big Bang or the other one before that? Episode 12, when we're charting the history of the painting. And there's Winston, and there's Professor Bracewell. Well, what's Bracewell still doing there? Why hasn't he run off with his...
Yeah, a lot of people have said that.
Are they? Okay.
Yeah, unless he has run off, but he's retained his...
He's got a black artificial hand of some sort, isn't it?
Maybe sort of he was talked into retaining
back.
His scientific position, but he's still with the woman. But yeah, I agree that it's a silly bit. But then things have changed a bit, haven't they?
Oh, okay.
With the cracks in time, have sort of they could explain.
You're making
that
excuses
way.
For them now.
Yeah, I know. that it's not just that. It was something else that. No, I was just trying to think what it was. Most of it I really enjoy. I enjoy the interaction between, especially like the Daleks in their sort of camis.
In their camisoles.
You know, in
camouflage. Yes.
I especially like them. I think they're really probably the most sinister sort of version of the.
Oh, well, there's a nice little echo back to Power of the Daleks, and he says, "I am your soldier rather than servant." So things like that.
That side of it's really good. The new Daleks, I could accept them now. I suppose I did think, you know, in Big Bang as a Pandora, when they're all like cased in that material, they look really good like that. But when they're multicoloured form, didn't like them. But again, we're going to have to get used to it because they're obviously going to retain that image for a while.
I thought it was a very strange sort of revamp. Sorry?
Daughter Isabella thinks there is a pink one.
Oh, there probably is. I mean, I didn't particularly like the old sort of bronzy gold-coloured ones. Mm. I thought they were over-designed in a sort of fiddly, finicky kind of way.
Maybe so.
Various sort of details around the shell.
And
I thought,
they
did
look good.
Well, yeah, too beautiful.
Maybe
But you could believe in them being tanks, and the new ones just look like sort of white vans, transit vans.
Yeah.
With big bumpers and things. Which that middle section. And I looked at a white van the other day, and I thought, what does this remind me of? And I thought,
Minis.
It reminds me of one of the new style Daleks.
Yeah.
But I thought the sort of war room place, was very claustrophobic. It seems slightly washed out with sepia tones and things, like sort of giving us more of a wartime look overall. Yeah. Very sort of drab colouring to it all. Great music I've got written here as well. Great music in this episode. Love the bit with the biscuit.
Yeah.
But And again, I don't know where this was filmed in the overall scheme of things.
Okay, so Jammy Dodger, but I was expecting tea.
I was promised tea, I think.
I promised tea, that's it.
I was promised tea, yeah. But Matt Smith, and I've got nothing but praise for Matt Smith, except in this episode, and I don't know why it is, it just seems his confrontational scenes with the Daleks, and I can't quite define what my problem is with him in those scenes, it just didn't hit the right key for me, or the right note. And I don't know why, because everything else in that episode with him, to do with him, was fine. But when he's shouting down the Daleks, apart from the sweetheart line, whatever that was, which I thought was funny, and just, you know, on the money. But the rest of it, I don't know, even when we were sort of going out with a giant, you know, spanner or whatever it was, I thought, no, this doesn't ring right somehow with me. That's just me. I've got new Daleks awful written. I think the voice of Danny Boy is Mark Gatiss, by the way.
It is,
right, okay. I didn't think it was. I've got it here. Amy implies she understands Bracewell's desire to kill himself, which was possibly an interesting
That's another thing at the time I thought was a bit...
To her previously troubled state, as
she suddenly realises she has to talk the bomb out of exploding, sort of thing. I can forgive it, it's Doctor Who, and you know, but that's what this Darth Sceptical chap is always going on about. It's things that don't make sense. And sometimes you can explain that away by saying it's a man who regenerates, also flies around in a blue box in time and space.
And you want this to make sense?
Yeah.
I've just got here. I thought the diffusing Bracewell scene was nonsense, basically, that thing in his chest.
Yeah.
But it's very nicely played. Yes. Actually, quite nicely written and quite very nicely played. But in itself,
it had overtones to the actual whole arc in itself because. Amy had to remember the Doctor, so he had to remember he was human, not to explode, sort of thing, in a way. But you'll always know, because he opens his chest up, he's got a great big thing there, hasn't he? But I'm surprised he hadn't noticed it before, actually. Surely if thought he was human, he would have had a shower of some kind, and he might have gone naked and realised he had a... Oh, I see, the Doctor did something to open
up. He did, I think, yes.
Oh, I forgive myself for that one. Duh. Yeah.
And I think this is one of the last times the Doctor does his ha-ha laugh.
Is it?
Yeah. Which I think he must have abandoned quite early on in the shooting schedule.
But I seem to remember the 10th Doctor doing a ha-ha sort of laugh.
Does he?
Okay, I'll have to look back on that one.
We don't think
Leisha's very good.
We don't talk about the 10th Doctor anymore.
She is a sort of... You're a professor of...
David Who,
the whole
sorry.
Of Doctor Who, whereas Leisha is a professor of Tennant Who, I think. She
oh, poor girl. I do feel sorry.
So, I think we've covered... I quite like... I mean, when I first watched that particular story, I loved it. But I've been perhaps tainted by the opinions of other Doctor Who fans. There's certainly things in it, holes in it, which I'm not happy with, you know, as far as...
You could fly a Spitfire through.
Yes. But on the whole, it's a good, fun story. There's some brilliant bits in it, and the atmosphere and everything. And there's certain scene. I love the bit... Oh, somebody said, that's what I remember it was now, about there's no Germans in it. There's no Germans. Sorry, war thing, there's no Germans in it. But there is a blimey. There's Stukas coming over, just about to you know, which the Dalek then exterminates.
I want Doctor Who with Nazis.
Yes, because obviously the Daleks
and some singing nuns, please.
This is the ultimate irony. The Daleks are the Nazis. But there you go. Moving
of course, yes, absolutely.
Moving on, episode 4.
Time, is it The Time of Angels? Or Time of the Angels? Whichever.
Doesn't matter.
Okay. great snappy dialogue I've got here. Good setup. Good intro for River Song. And bearing in mind, I think I'm right in saying this is Matt's first story recorded, then, well, he just nails it from day one.
Outstanding.
Yes.
Also, it would have been Karen Gillan's first performance.
Absolutely.
And again, outstanding. It's just so many things you can say about it in its brilliance. So a little bit of slightly annoying things like that you know, she's been sucked out into space, but the Doctor's obviously created some sort of thing for her not to be imploded when you know that time that tunnel thing that was it an atmosphere tunnel or something? I can't remember.
Didn't she request something?
Yeah, she does.
Yes, right, okay.
She on a little stone thing that he finds in a museum that
says
Hello Sweetie on it.
Hello Sweetie.
And the coordinates. Coordinates? Coordinates.
That really works as a text, by the way. Yes.
But yeah, and there's so many really good sort of gripping bits, isn't it? Like when Amy's in that locked in that thing and she's looking at the TV screen, the angels when it sort of turns to face.
Oh, that whole
so
sequence
creepy.
With the clip, which keeps changing.
Yeah,
I got just very creepy here, and again, very.
The fact
good,
that it's in black and white helps as well. I think that particular. Well, why they would have a black and white screen so far into the future, I don't know. But, yeah.
The remote was a bit clunky there.
What was clunky?
The remote.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. Maybe they're trying to hark back to the 1970s view of the future where all the sort of things were all clunky and retro. So they're trying to say, yes, well, some things in the future will be clunky and retro and old-fashioned switches and buttons and things like that. Possibly. I don't know. But, yeah, it's an extraordinary piece of television, I think you can call it. I mean, again, there's a few little... well, I'll tell you what, my wife Deb, who's not a Doctor Who fan... I think it's something she didn't like about it. Well, she didn't like the bit, and I know we're moving on to the next episode, but it is part of the same story, where, you know, the bit where they're sort of hanging from things towards the end, and the angels fall into the crack, and then suddenly they're back on the beach again. She didn't like the sudden, well, how did they get from there to there bit? That's
but they walked back again.
Well, I didn't know whether it's because the angels have been wiped from ever existing. That why would they have been there in the first place? So they're on the beach. Why would they have any memory of their baby?
Oh, I see. Yes.
Existing, if they know.
That was also convoluted.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's the only thing that's a bit. I know. I say that's in the next episode, but I think we can more or less talk about both episodes as one story. So for me, when I hadn't thought of that until she said about that. That yes, they were saying when Rory dies, she was trying to cling hold of the memory. Yet suddenly the whole reason why they were there was to deal with these angels, and suddenly on the beach, and they had no memory of why they were all there in the first place. Yet they did, and Rivers carted off to a little incarceration thing. But I don't care because it's absolutely brilliant. I mean, that scene in the forest where everybody's speculating as to why Matt had his jacket back on, and was it a continuity error? Of course, it wasn't. And I was so glad.
Well, I know that
it wasn't.
Now.
I know, but I was so glad it wasn't.
But why is his great his bare forearm coming to short? Because he's got his jacket on.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Anyway. Yes, he's wearing his jacket, but in that shot where he grips
it's quite a long way up his arm,
her wrist or whatever he does.
Quite a long way.
There's no sign of the cuff of the coat at all.
No,
there's a great bare forearm.
That's quite interesting. Maybe there was maybe they just worked it.
I think we're trying to read too much into things.
No,
probably.
I don't know. Possibly.
I've got Bishop and Song here. Sounds like a double act.
Yeah.
Well, it was in many ways. The mystery deepens, and I'll tell him what's really going on, sort of thing.
Mm.
I thought that was nicely played, and I like the no offence meant, and quite a lot taken actually, and various sort of bits of dialogue like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's just. I like it when the writer keeps the doctors on his toes, and he may sort of come out with something glib, and then I can't get away with saying that actually, as of the doctor. Not everyone sort of just follows me around and thinks I'm wonderful. So
of course, the other bit of that episode, which was quite creepy, was the voice of Angel Bob, because he was monotonic, and. Unangel-like. That was really creepy. And the other bit, when she was, her hand was stone, and the doctor had to bite it. And of course, they played that scene for real, didn't they?
Yes.
Which obviously made it sort of brought that scene to life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I was just.
The other point I've got here is that this story, or at least a line in it, sets up the whole what happens later in the whole season of Time Can Be Rewritten.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually part of the stone hand scene.
Yes.
According to this, what I've got in front of me here. again, the wordplay, going back to the script thing, of sacred and scared Bob.
That's why he's called Sacred Bob on the Flashing Blade podcast.
Ah, is it?
Oh, yes.
Sacred and scared, there we are.
Carry on, no, that just... Duh.
Just swap the A and the C in there. A and the C, is that right? Yes. Yes.
For what?
Sorry. From sacred to scared, yes.
Oh, yes, of course.
Sorry, the way I've written it looks like sugared.
Well, children of time
Bob,
think
please.
The sacred Bob is called the secret Bob.
Oh, the secret Bob. Yes. Okay. Fine. For some reason, I've got book and then Sharda joke, but I don't know what that means. Hey-ho.
Is it?
I don't know.
Huh.
No, they don't go BBC, do they? No, I'm sure they don't.
I don't know.
Or ABBBC? No.
Eagle Eye.
I don't know what that means.
Hmm. So on the whole, we can so far say that this particular story as a whole is the best one.
Yes, let's just see if there's anything else to sort of throw into the pot as regards the other half of it. I've got the idea of the tree borgs.
Tree borgs?
The tree borgs. The forest you're talking about. They're tree borgs.
Are they?
Yeah. Hmm. They've got electronics inside them. Oh. It's an eco pocket. Apparently.
Missed that bit.
Yeah. And the bit of the numbers counting down, which is 10
for no reason. That is
nine.
Excellent. Yes.
That was very nicely done. Yes. What is going on here?
That is it.
Counting down.
And played brilliantly as well.
And why do they do it?
Do what?
No, he asks why they're doing it.
For fun. Yes. That's really good, yeah. I suppose the other thing is... when they jump up and suddenly they're sort of the other way up and decide why they weren't sort of had lots of broken bones when they landed, and the underside of the spaceship was a bit why.
Mm.
But I suppose again it didn't matter. It's Doctor Who and it's a science fiction sort of fantasy story, so things like that can be forgiven sometimes by certain people, including me.
Right.
Yeah, I agree, but that's really... I've forgotten about that. And, of course, the bit where they keep wandering off and leaving Amy in the forest and they disappear into the crack and she can remember them, but they can't.
Sort of yeah. Thing. Octavian's last scene.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
brilliant.
Good stuff.
Mm.
Good
and harrowing to watch as well.
Yes.
A second time, and he knows exactly what's going to happen to him. I don't like listening to the noise. Horrible.
And of course he tells the Doctor that River's going to kill a man and a hero to many, a good man.
Yeah, so we're supposed to believe that's the Doctor, obviously.
Well, are we? I don't know. Well, obviously I suppose we're supposed to, but...
Mm, but it could be anybody, couldn't it? Really?
It could be anybody. It just...
Okay. I got it in my mind that it could be somebody who knows something about the Doctor's... Maybe he reads the diary that River Song has and knows something's going to happen, is going to tell the Doctor, and River knows that that cannot happen. And she kills this man to prevent it happening and then goes to prison for it. I'm hoping it's something like that because I like River as a character. I don't want her to be too sinister, although she was quite cold-blooded when she killed the Dalek in the Big Bang. I thought that one, didn't really matter to me if it was a Dalek. The way she, the Dalek said mercy, and she didn't have any mercy for it, which I thought was a bit odd. Mm. Or maybe, I think it's supposed to be significant, that particular scene. But there you go. Anyway, I'm moving on again, am I?
Mm-hmm.
So, yes.
Another reference to the sort of fairy tale aspect of the whole series, really.
Which is?
Well, no, she says something about the Pandorica, and the Doctor says, that's a fairy tale, and whispers, that's a fairy tale.
Hmm.
Well, no, it isn't. But, yeah. I don't think there's anything else I can glean from what I've written here. Well, I don't know if they conflict or not. It's just comments I've written down about the crack, because there's a flashback sequence.
Oh, there's lots of conflicting things about the crack.
Well, I mean, one minute it's the fire at the end of the universe, yeah. And it's pure time energy, and it's...
I suppose, but the Big Bang
more,
is the end of the
universe. More power than you can... was it more power than you yet understand, and bloody, bloody... And I think, do all these things add up? I suppose they do.
Well, they do, because power at the end of the universe being the Big Bang, which then creates the universe... there must be a lot of power in the TARDIS, because if it was actually able to actually keep the Earth alive for its own sort of explosion, so yes. Anyway, yes.
That's a lot of heat. That's a lot of heat, ladies and gentlemen.
Indeed.
Are we moving on?
Yes.
Right, Vampires of Venice. I walked out of this.
No, there you go. So did you actually manage to watch it?
I don't know. I think I was bored by it within about the first 5 minutes. I just thought, what is this all about? I just didn't like it at all, first time round.
Mm.
And it took me, this is episode 6, so it took me 7-8 weeks to go back and watch it again.
And did you manage to sit through it this time?
I did, and I enjoyed it. Yes. I still don't understand right at the end how what's-her-face jumping in the tide.
Yeah, but why, and also, she's just early on, she's sort of got that sort of thing.
Oh, she takes her clothes off, and I think that's all a hologram thing,
yes.
Anyway, isn't it?
So, why would she do that?
What? Yeah, okay.
Yes, that may be right. I only spotted that because somebody else mentioned about it, but it does make no sense whatsoever. Where actually you've got this, I mean, what they call those things again? Perception filter.
That's right.
Which they seem to like using a lot at the moment.
Yeah.
And then she's suddenly taking her clothes on. Perception filter clothes and throwing these perception filter clothes, which then remained perception filter clothes, on the side of the.
Actually, with some of those.
Yeah, cool.
Not but, especially now.
I did, but again, I've enjoyed every episode. But you've got to try, and there are things a bit slightly annoying things. Every, and when you watch it confidentially, you appreciate the episodes a bit more as well.
Oh, I did very much so. That goes for all of them, really. But you shouldn't have to watch another programme to appreciate the one you've just been watching.
That's very true. But I did I did like the episode before I watched The Confidential. It's just The Confidential made me appreciate the episode a bit more. But it's not my favourite one of the series.
No.
There was a good scene in that. The one that I enjoyed was the fight between Rory and the bloke who did the audio for the... No, the voiceover for The Confidential is Alex somebody or other. He did the scene.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There we go.
I saw his name going up.
Information.
I saw his name going up time after time. I thought, who
from The Confidential, he said, me and Rory. Me and Arthur, didn't they? Me and Arthur. Oh, yes, him.
Well, I didn't know who Arthur was until... because I saw he's doing an audiobook, and I thought, well, who's Arthur? Whatever his name is.
That's something, another thing we didn't talk about. The bit at the end of... when she was coming on to the doctor. And,
oh, right.
Did we talk about that? Is that on your notes?
All I've got here is a bedroom scene. Yes, right, yes. Amy, it's all about you. It's all about you.
At the time I was in uproar about that particular scene, but fortunately it obviously panned out a little bit to explain itself to the doctor. He didn't want that, and he was trying to get Amy and Rory together, so I forgive him for that. But it was at the time, other people loved it was a good scene, and now I do like it because I know what context it was in.
Yes.
But at the time I was fuming about it, but of course then it brought Rory into the story, and I love Rory, and particularly that scene of him doing that fight and sort of brought him into my heart as a companion in the series.
Oh, right. Okay.
But that's all I can glean from Vampires.
Well, we're segue to Rory then, or back to Rory, by way of my idea about the Stag Knight and just Matt Smith's... his capacity for comedy, which is never sort of over the top and ridiculous, it's just sort of in the moment, and it feels genuine and like... You know, he does it and then realises he's doing something wrong, or he's not quite, doesn't know how to do human comedy or something.
Lodger, isn't it? It's a bit of a sort of precursor to the Lodger in a way.
There was a Casanova joke thrown in there, which was quite good if you want to pick up on it. What else does this say? Oh, picturesque. Well, the film work, presumably, the camera work. Nice camera work, lighting throughout. Rory, actually going back to Rory, yes, cast very much as an outsider here, because he's seeing what she's been up to all this time.
Yeah.
Although it's only the same night or the night after or the day before or something, from his point of view.
Yeah.
And and being sort of relegated to being her fiancé or brother or whatever it is.
Mm.
But you see through his portrayal that he's being kept at arm's length throughout most of this and doesn't like it, obviously, which is fair enough.
But the thing is, while you're da-da-da-daring, that just brought me to the end when the doctor's climbing up that tower.
Yeah.
Very reminiscent of the bit at the end of The Wire when he's. Is it The Wire that episode's called?
It's not called The Wire, is it? It's called.
Idiot's Lantern.
I've got the book up there.
Idiot's Lantern.
The book's very good, by
And it's also a bit like the bit from the Daleks of Manhattan story when he's climbing the top of the...
He likes climbing up things, and sometimes he falls off and changes, so...
Oh, yes, very good, yes.
What else have we got here? I thought very nicely underplayed confrontation between the Doctor and... What's her name? Calvieri or something? The woman with the...
I know who you're talking about, but I just don't know what her name is.
No, I don't know. I could have been sort of ranting and raving, and it wasn't. It was just
typical Doctor.
Nicely sort of skirting around each other.
It's the sort of thing that Toby Haydoke talks about in when he's being bullied, and this is in Moth Lake, my Doctor Who's got, and he uses the Doctor's sort of put-me-downs without the bully realising he's using it. That sort of thing. It's that he was using that sort of doctoriness against her, which I quite enjoyed, yes. I also like that. A lot of people hate it, but I like that the Isabella's father wearing Rory's T-shirt with a stag night thing.
Oh, I've got a note about this, yes.
I quite like that, yes. But other people hate it.
I thought that was funny. I like that.
Yeah.
What else have we got? Oh, dreadful, with a big squiggly line under it. Dreadful CGI cloud smoke effects. Again, I thought a lot of the effects in this series look really tacky.
Well, that's because they haven't got the budget for it.
Well, I know that.
Does the mill do it, though, now?
I don't know what the mill do or don't.
They're the CGI
don't
do. People first. Had been.
Until oh, have been. But
the end of series four. At the end of the specials, I should say.
I don't know.
But they have. Hopefully, they can inject a bit more. But I'd like to see Moffat have the budget that RTD had and see what he can do with it, because I think that's a bit unfair myself. And that concludes part one of this episode. Please now tune over to part two.